Hi everyone, my guest this week is Anne Watkins, and it was so good to catch up with Anne, who I've known since, as we say at the beginning of the interview, 1994. Now, Anne lives in Lampeter. She first went there in 1985. She talks about studying philosophy and ethics in Western thought, hearing the sheep bleating on the hill, and knowing that Lampeter was the place for her. We talk about long friendships, especially with overseas students, growing up in Cardiff, her earliest memories, the traumatic transition to high school, listening to the charts, how her dreams have changed over the years. We find out why she couldn't join the Merchant Navy. She talks about the importance of travel, failing her O-levels, but ending up and staying and working in higher education. Anne is a fanatical record keeper with diaries and photograph albums, and she talks about what the diaries mean to her. We find out about the teachers who inspired Anne. She remembers some of the gigs that she went to see when she was growing up, as well as the time when disco dancing was all the rage. Anne talks about what has changed in recent years in terms of going out versus staying at home due to lockdown. We hear her lockdown story and how she ended up returning to letter writing. Towards the end of the interview, Anne talks about how she would live her life again in the same way and how she tries not to dwell too much on what is negative. We find out that friendships are crucially important, and also why her home might be called a shrine. It was an immense privilege, in person in her home in Lampeter, to catch up in the summer of 2022 with Anne Watkins for the latest in my series of nostalgia interviews. My name is Chris DC. Well, it is my great pleasure to have Anne Watkins for my latest nostalgia interview. And Anne, I think we've known each other since 1994.
I would have guessed 96. Yeah. I'm sure you're correct.
Yeah. So no, you had two more years of me. And no, because I remember, because we've got so many mutual friends, and I think I just got my degree. I think I was looking for somewhere to live. And you said, I've got the place for you. And actually, and I'll say this, I'm sure you're too modest to even think of this yourself, but you're somebody who has always effortlessly helped everyone, particularly people who've come to Lampeter, which is where we're sitting here today, people who come from overseas, and you're the person who makes them feel very welcome, show them around, and they're indebted to you. Your name comes up. The number of people who say to me, how's Auntie Annie doing? And that's you. So what a privilege to be interviewing you this morning.
Oh, bless you for putting it all so lovely.
And of course we have a Cardiff connection as well.
We do.
Yeah. So do you want to say a little bit first of all about when you came to Lampeter and why you came to Lampeter?
I think my actions are very often a reaction against something I don't want to do. And I came here in 1985. I'd been at Plato College in Oxford, which I think would possibly now be classed as an access course. I only wanted to do that access course, that diploma in theology and social ethics, to get a higher position in the civil service. But most of my contemporaries in Plato College were using it as a stepping stone to university. I'm indebted to Barbara, who was my friend there, who insisted I go on to university and even found the course Philosophy and Ethics in Western Thought. And here I am.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't actually quite here I am. I came for the interviews, and because Lampeter is quite away from Oxford, where I was at the time, I had to stay overnight. And when I woke up in the morning and heard the sheep bleating on the hill, I thought, this is where I want to be.
And it's interesting because we both came from the same city,
yes,
in Cardiff. And as I was driving up yesterday,
yes,
I had the same feeling. And I suppose it could be here, it could be. So, but it's something that I don't feel anywhere else. That sort of the combination of the butterflies in the stomach, a sense of trepidation. I think it's the smallness of Lampeter, but also this is the place. It's like a time capsule of all our memories, the good and the bad, all crystallised in this place. And you know that in coming back, you're not going to have a random or even an indifferent sort of weekend. But you've made this your home and you've been here pretty much for, what, 30 years?
Probably about that, yes. I didn't come with the intention of making it my home. And in fact, after I finished my MA, I went back to Cardiff. the world of work had changed. I was only getting short contracts. But where my flat was located wasn't the most desirable area, and there was an attempted break-in. My car was vandalised, and I just thought, I don't think I want to be in the city anymore, yeah. And came back and stayed.
Yeah, and in terms of the people who you met, I mean, I'm going to guess that the friends that you made when you first came here are still, obviously, those who are still with us. But you, I'm guessing, are still in touch with them all these years later. That's the thing about Lampeter, the beauty of Lampeter, the way that it actually has a great opportunity to ensure that all those friendships that are cultivated are lifelong. You know, once you've established a friendship, and it might be something to do with the place, the closeness of the place, but those ties are long held. And I'm in touch with people from 30 odd years ago, and it's whenever I see them, it's like we never left.
Yes. Yeah. Long friendships have been made. I think you mentioned at the beginning that a lot of my friendships with the overseas students, having lived and worked and studied overseas myself, you really know what is needed. But the sad thing about those friendships is they leave, and they leave to very distant places. However, I had many pen friends, so I have a wonderful stamp collection. Yeah. And now, of course, we have email. Yeah. So still in touch.
Yeah, well, philately will get you everywhere, of course. Yeah. Yeah, and actually that's an interesting point, because I think through social media, and I know that might be something that you'll do more of. But social media is actually a really good way of bringing together those people who, you know, once upon a time, you know, we'd have to write letters. And actually you're the sort of person who would go to the effort to write those long missives and, you know, keep in touch. And, you know, people, we don't have the time to do those sort of things anymore. We have like WhatsApp groups and so on. I suppose it means there's more sort of interactivity. But I think that it's those sort of connections, I think, that are particularly important. And as you say, people who are spread out, you know, in different continents, in Trinidad or in Japan, and we've got mutual friends in all of those places.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And do you want to say a little bit then about actually what you studied here in Lampeter?
Yes. So my BA was Philosophy and Ethics in Western Thought, which seemed appropriate as I'd done social ethics in Oxford. The course was quite different, of course, but I think also philosophy is a good medium. In fact, when I came here to do religious studies, philosophy was compulsory in the first year. And although there were aspects of philosophy that I found really difficult, it does make you think clearly and argue tightly. So that was a real blessing. Then I moved on to what was then the brand new MA in interfaith relations. Being brand new, it had its teething troubles. Also, it was limited to the three patriarchic faiths, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. But I think that aspect of study probably was hugely influential in my life.
Yeah. And going back a little bit further, I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, earliest memories or things, you know, growing up in Cardiff.
Oh, yes.
Is there anything? Because I mean, I have this, I sort of look back and there are always those sort of seminal events. It might be, in my case, it was like the music at nursery. It's a, you know, in fact, they actually even gave me the records at the end. It's like Pinky and Perky and all that sort of stuff. You know. But, you know, the sort of things that you look back and think, God, that was wonderfully quirky. And I haven't changed a bit since I was four, you know, as anybody who knows me would probably testify. But are there particular things from growing up in Cardiff that really stand out?
Let me think. My first school, my first school was a little preparatory school in what's now Riverside, I think. And my memory from there, well, my teacher, Miss Klimo, must have had an orange for breakfast because she smelt delightful every day. My real memory from that place is they managed to leave me in the hall that we went to ballet classes, and somebody had to come back and get me. I can't imagine how it possibly happened, but that was that. My next school was Coedglas in Llanishan, and that was just a kind of a happy time, really, with Mr. Coleman was our teacher. And, yeah, I think Up until that, school had been fine. The transition to high school, secondary school, was, for some reason or other, fairly traumatic. And I think, despite my parents' input and value of education, I really hated school. However, from then on, it was Catholic education, St. Joseph's Convent and Heathfield House Grammar School. So all those memories actually are very much quite Catholic memories. I really enjoyed the Corpus Christi procession. Do you remember the Corpus Christi procession?
No, I don't actually.
It was a feast in June, and every Catholic school in Cardiff marched through the city centre. Each group school would leave its own school, march to the city centre, then we'd all link up, and we'd finish off with, I presume, either Mass or Benediction in the castle grounds. And things like May processions, May the Feast of Our Lady. So if you were lucky, you were chosen to put the garland of flowers on her head, on the statue's head.
And I always think, I mean, for me, I always think of the playground dynamics. So we were always, and for me, it was always the music, it was the charts, it was always the sort of, you know, the friendships are often established by the sort of, you know, what do we have in common? What do we like? What are the songs that we listen to? Do we, you know, the charts on a Sunday for me was seismic. Drove my parents potty. Exactly. You know, having to listen and write them down every Sunday.
Yes.
But did you have any of those sort of memories as well?
Yes, but more on my own.
Yeah.
I was kept. We were kept quite young in those days, and being in single-sex schools, we didn't really have discos and things like that. So, but yes, I was a fanatic. Was it 5 until 7 o'clock on a Sunday evening?
On a Sunday,
evening,
it was.
Pick of the Pops, yes. And then the annual Top of the Pops on
Christmas Day.
On Christmas Day.
Before the Queen's speech.
Yes. And in those days, of course, recording was very difficult because you could only have a microphone in front of the television. And there was Dad hollering in the background about the cooking in the kitchen and the children all excited about their toys. Yeah. And my recordings are very poor, Chris.
And you don't still have these, I take it?
I do.
You do.
But the problem is they're on tape to tape. And I've got to find a way of getting them. I still have my reel-to-reel recorder, but it's very space-taking. I do need to find somebody or some way to get them from tape onto, maybe not cassette, maybe I could go on to CDs.
Yeah. well, actually, it's funny you say that, because 10 years ago I did that. I digitized all my old tapes, my music
did
tapes,
you?
You know, the stuff I used to record
legally
or otherwise, but it was only for my own consumption
in
Lampeter. But of course, these days it's all streamed, you know. So it's the next stage. It's all like MP3 files that you could listen to in your car or otherwise.
Yes.
But no, I'm still in that sort of CD mindset.
Yes.
But actually having digital versions. But once we finish the recording,
I might be able to help you.
I may pick your brains, and
as a special favour, I'll let you listen to them as you record them.
Thank you. Well, yes. Well, you see, I live out this whole nostalgia, so you can imagine that's kind of what I was asking. And what about the, I suppose it's that sort of question sometimes about, you know, when you're young, what you imagine that you're going to end up doing and whether those dreams have sort of, you know, been met. But do you, when you were young, growing up in Cardiff, you know, before you presumably even heard of Lampeter, you know, what did you imagine you'd be doing with your life? Where did you imagine you might end up? Or like me, you know, well, I suppose I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to be presenting Pick of the Pops on the radio, the very programme that you mentioned. But did you have any sort of expectations of what you're going to do with your life?
My real dream, Chris, was to be a mermaid. So needless to say, that was not fulfilled. I would say my desires have changed as I've grown. One of the interesting ones was to join the Merchant Navy in the hope of seeing the world. At that time, I hadn't even been on an aeroplane. I was 29 before my first flight. So I went for my interviews, but tragically in those days, there just was not equality. And the gentleman that interviewed me said I was ideal, but they didn't have ladies' toilets on ships. And that was the end of the conversation. It is funny what we dream about and what materialises, because travel was one of my daydreams. This may be the reason I failed my O-levels, because I spent my time planning the conversion of a double-decker bus or an ambulance that I was going to drive around the world.
Yeah.
And then, incredibly, I have travelled a lot. It is remarkable the way what we dream becomes reality.
And it's funny you say that, because when you said you were 29, I think I beat you by only a couple of years. I think I was 27 when I flew for the first time. Mm. And I was still in Lampeter in those days, and I went to a film festival.
Ah.
And I had to get a passport, and everyone was like, "You don't have a passport." "Oh, okay, I'll happily endorse it, but are you sure you don't have one today?" That was the one thing. But also, you mentioned about education and what happened with your O-levels. But isn't that interesting that you ended up working in education, higher education, and the number of times that has happened, and it's happened in Lampeter, because I'm involved in the Link, which is the big
yes.
Lampeter magazine, and we were looking at geography students, because geography, that's very nostalgic, because of course the geography department is no longer here, but the number of students who didn't pass their A-levels and thought, right, that's it, my dreams of going to university are over, but Lampeter accepted them. And we're not just talking about one or two people. There seemed to be a pattern.
Mm.
So they were sort of no hopers. They were failed by the system. They had no chance of going to university. Lampeter took a chance on them. And now they're, in some cases, they may be professor of geography, so and so, so and so. So, and very similar for yourself, because you worked in a university department. You were involved in the, was it the Alistair Hardy
Religious Experience
Research Centre. We said that in such perfect synchronicity. Yeah. So, but do you think that there's a common link there? The fact that first time around, maybe things didn't go brilliantly, but it made you even more determined to ensure that you got to do what you perhaps set out to do.
I think there is an element of that. I often think about this myself, because I left school as a total failure, and I then wonder how I came to not only succeed but love learning. It's such a contradiction, paradox maybe, but anyway, it does. And then I think another reason that I went into education, and it hasn't just been higher education here, when I work in India, I do any age group from nursery through to colleges and universities, I think I wanted to make a better school or learning experience than I had myself. I wanted to improve it for others. I wanted to somehow recognise those ones that were either struggling or not happy and help them achieve something.
Yeah. And do you then look back, and I know the answer to this, and you, as again, you might be too modest to answer, but are you aware that you've shaped some people, and that all these years on, through that sort of impetus, I think of the international students particularly,
yes,
who perhaps came here and found a bit of a strange land, perhaps found that it was very different to anything they'd experienced before, but actually sort of, and this was always my sense with Lampeter, it's always the people that make it so special. And so you gave that sort of impetus, it can work, this can, it's you haven't made the wrong choice, and we're here to help you if you need your hand to be held.
Yes, I think you're right in that sense, but yes, I have had, no, generally not aware of, but all I know is that those students, lots of them keep in touch and obviously have a fondness for me, which is nice. So that suggests something happened. My real experience was a few years ago when somebody that I rarely keep in touch with was himself being nostalgic, 30 years since he'd been here, and sent me a gift. And I was so moved that I had been such a part of that 30 year ago experience.
Yeah. And are you aware of time to that extent? I mean, I've always kept a diary. As anybody who listens to my interviews will know, it's like, Chris, you really, what a confession. Because I know that you're a huge letter writer, and but are you somebody who sort of keeps tabs? Do you have a record? Are you interested? Photographs, I always associate with you. You'd
yes.
always have you, and I used to go to Cardiff sometimes on my many visits, and I think go to the camera shop in the Hayes, I think
it was, yes.
and get those done for you. But do you have a record of all of those days?
Yes, I am a fanatical record keeper. I don't do it as a fanaticism, but it's when I look around my home and see the shelves of diaries, the bookcases of albums, that I realise. What I do find strange now is that those momentous moments. I was fortunate when I was in Lampeter to get an exchange programme for a year in California. That, again, there have been so many life-changing episodes in my life. That was momentous. So strong that those emotions are still with me. In some ways, it seems like only yesterday. The memories are there, the friendships are there, and yet, when was that? 1985. It's time is a strange concept.
And do you look back over all of these sort of entries? Are you somebody? Do you need to do it, or is it just the fact that they're there? That the you know, or maybe if somebody's visiting and you can say, "Let me get my 1985 album out," or you know, to what extent does it impact on you today?
Exactly, I do refer. I don't methodically go through them. Occasionally, if it's an anniversary, perhaps the first spell in Japan, I'll read those. Very often what does happen is that somebody will come and say, "Did we do so-and-so? Was it that we did together?" Well, then the easy thing is we have a year, there are less photos than pages of a diary. So we find the photos and then we refer to the diaries. Yeah. And it works nicely.
Yeah. And have you been doing that all your life? Was it something that you started in school, or was it a Lampeter thing?
It was pre-Lampeter. It started, the diaries started in 1974. My father had a friend, Vincent Keneally, who was a valuer and auctioneer, and he gave Dad a decent diary every year. And I started keeping my daily diary. That's continued. Poor Vincent and Dad have both gone on, but the diary continues. Sure when photographs started, because in one sense when it started for me, it was quite an expensive hobby. You had to buy the film, you had to be careful about which photo you took, because you couldn't waste two photos on anything.
And it's funny, because just before we started recording this, of course, we took multiple pictures, which, and anyone listening to this will be able to see the one that we chose.
Yes.
But what's interesting is that we had the luxury of looking at it and thinking, "Oh, are the eyes opening out, or do we like the background?"
Exactly.
But in those days, as you say, and I say in those days, I mean, it's only in the last 20 years, even maybe even 18, when people started moving towards digital cameras. But we had the one chance to take it. And, of course, you'd go on a big holiday or there'd be a big event. And it was like, you know, this was the momentous occasion. Or there might be a celebrity or something in the background or something. It's like, I must take a picture. And you're waited with bated breath. Or you take even an extra few pictures just so you could get to the end of the film, go to Boots, get your... Was it the 1 hour developing?
Oh, no, I had to wait for the week.
Oh, wow. Anne, you've got far more patience than me. And then look at the pictures and either be delighted or just horrified.
Yes. I think, actually, while you were talking, I'm ashamed, I did try to think about when I started. I think I had my first camera when I was in Bakery College in Cardiff. I have photos of my contemporaries there.
Because my sense at the time, and I have friends in Lampeter, they might sometimes say, "Oh, why do you bother?" Or, "Oh, what a silly thing." But I wonder if those, you know, at the time... You of course, you think, "Well, we're just so busy. We've got exams to worry about, essays to do, friends to meet. You know, why waste time with a diary?" But with the passage of time, and also when those people maybe pass away, you lose touch with them. And also there are times when we all need this sometimes, just to say, "Okay, you know, what's my purpose in this world? You know, where do I fit in?" Or, you know, or that person means something to me, but they're not in my life now. And you start trawling through all of this. And it's very edifying. And also, I find it's a good corrective against insanity for a start, because it's almost like, you know, did that happen? Yes, it did. It's in the diary.
Yes.
I didn't misremember. But do you have those sort of feelings?
First of all, I think it is a bit of an emotional outlet. Thank God, there aren't too many moments when I'm very distressed or angry. But rather than upsetting someone, I can get it down on paper. But yes... In recent years, let's put it that way, I've started going on holidays with ladies, women that I was friendly with when I was younger, tragically, because they're now widows, basically, and not used to travelling alone. But it's worked out nicely. However, we were recently discussing that I knew my friend had taken me to Sandbach. Sandbach? I don't know. Anyway, Sandbach. She insisted she had not. Photos! Yes.
Yeah. No, and that's wonderful that you've kept those all these years. I mean, when you were at Lampeter, and I suppose this can also apply to your schools as well, were there particular teachers, lecturers who inspired you? We probably know the same people, but the people who sort of made you think, you know, yeah, I have it to this day, even when I'm teaching my students, I'm channeling someone like Paul Badham because that's my education. It's very bespoke to Lampeter.
Yes.
Did you have those experiences as well?
Definitely. But... Well, I'll come back to Lampeter. Mine were really in my formative years, I would say, although my formative years lasted a long time. In St. Joseph's Convent, it was Miss O'Farrell. Mm. She was our English literature teacher. She was so enthused. Mm. And I remember us dancing around the cauldron in the classroom, being the three witches. I was only one of the witches. I couldn't do all three simultaneously. But that. She was a great inspiration. When I went to Heathfield, I have a great fondness for Miss Perry. I think she could see that the academic side of school was not doing anything for me at all. And she was biology. She gave me the animals to look after. I fed the stick insects and the African toads. Mm. And I thought that was very, in hindsight, very clever of her to infuse me in some way.
Because that's exactly what you have been doing in the years that I've known you. Not with the stick insects. Although I used to be a bit thinner than I am now. But you would... take on that pastoral role, that caring, the feeding role of careful, the animals.
The starving students.
Yes, exactly. I was thinking, careful how I put this, Chris. I could actually completely, you know, lose my entire, constituency of listeners. But isn't that really telling that she saw that caring, that nurturing side in you? I mean, that obviously would have been you probably did that 10 times more than she could ever have anticipated. I bet you that was your sort of full-on vocation.
Yes. Well, vocation's a funny word. No, I don't mean funny. It's just that with my upbringing, vocation is very much something we search for. I don't mean a religious vocation necessarily, just a vocation. Yeah. But it is interesting speaking with you, Chris, because I have to say I hadn't quite seen that caring side in myself.
No, and seriously, the number of so I'm putting you on a pedestal here, but the number of people when I said I was interviewing you, give him my love. Anyway, so that's interesting. But at Lampeter, because people, I mean, David Coburn, you're still in touch with. I mean, there are a whole number of people that you're integral to their lives.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yes, but I don't know what I can say about that. Really, I just feel. Lots of people have been very good to me too, Chris. You know, these things work both ways. Yeah. Either they've been good as lecturers or friends, very generous friends. I mean, and I think the thing is nowadays, what's precious to everybody is time.
Yeah.
And these friendships do require time. And I'm delighted that people... still remember me.
And what about all these sort of, I say, the extracurricular stuff, although I think we've already touched on that, but I mean, in terms of whether it was music or film, because Lampeter for me was always an interesting challenge, because I was doing a PhD on film, and you used to see me at the bus stop sometimes going down.
Sometimes, Chris. Every Saturday morning.
Yes, that's true. I can't. There's no point ever. It's on record. Yeah, but isn't that interesting? You had a car, of course, in those days.
Yes.
And I didn't. And looking back, I can sort of see the limitations to what I was doing. But did you find that there were maybe even younger in Cardiff with gigs or shows or films or anything? Was that an important part of sort of growing up for you?
Oh, yes. I was late starting.
Yeah.
I think I've said that before. But yes, definitely. Live bands, Lindisfarne. Mungo Jerry, yeah. Manfred Mann, Wizard. It was just wonderful. I just love... Oh, Leo Sayer was one comic.
You've just evoked the whole of the 70s.
Have I? That's probably when my father first let me out. Yeah. Yeah. So that was great fun. And then... Yes, I must have gone away somewhere, I don't know. When I came back, my brother was into discos. Yeah. That was my new passion, disco dancing. Yeah. And what I think we really, the only thing we lack in Lampeter now is a morning disco for the pensioners.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be in my element.
Yeah. Although you just made me think of two things. First of all, I have to do my Mungo Jerry joke, which is, when did you used to listen to Mungo Jerry? Oh, in the summertime.
Oh, no,
oh, terrible, Derek. No, they don't indulge me. But the other thing was something hilarious. And our mutual friend Wendy. When I came to my first reunion in 2018, I stopped off in Swansea. I stayed the night in Swansea, and I went to see a film at the cinema. I used a different brand now, a different company. And I took the picture, and also I said, "Yeah, I'm on my way to Lampeter," and of course she saw me in the multiplex, and of course the way it was worded, I suppose if you look quickly, so Chris is on his way to Lampeter, he's at the multiplex, and she thought, "Has Lampeter got a 10-screen multiplex?" And it was, and that was kind of hilarious for that, because that's the very thing that Lampeter, and also although I'm a great film person, I'm not sure I would have wanted a 10-screen multiplex in Lampeter. The whole point, and even now, I always get in my car, go to Dover, or, you know, I could go to the cinema on campus. It's literally like 10 feet from my office, but I choose to travel. And I'm wondering for you in Lampeter, that you, this has always been your home, or at least, you know, for the last 30 or more years. But it seems to me that journey out, where Oxford was a place you used to go to a lot, but is that an important part of it, that the fact that this is your base? And you can sort of and make those moments, those experiences really work.
It's a mixture. I was fortunate to have the car. I was a mature student, so the car came with me. I'd already earned it, so to speak. I am glad of it. What it means is I never feel trapped. And I have a feeling, I love Lampeter. And talking about Wendy, it was Wendy who always said, it's a bit isolated. I don't say it's a bit isolated. Yeah. But a number of people do feel cut off here. So I didn't have that fear because I knew I could always get in the car if I needed. I didn't think I travelled for the sake of travel. I felt it was for a purpose, to do a job or to attend a conference, something. However, it clearly was serving a purpose. I was getting a breath of, not fresh air, but the fresh air is here. I was getting a breath of different air, some input, things like that. Also, if we had had this interview just a few years ago, I would have said, I am a person who needs to be out there. I need to be doing things, experiencing things, meeting people. However, during lockdown, I've learned I like to be at home.
That is so revealing, because that's been my dilemma. The moment I had the opportunity to go back into the world, as it were, when the restrictions were lifted, I jumped at the chance. I followed the rules, unlike the people who created them. But the rules, important though they were to follow, the analogy is, I suppose it's like being in a kind of prison, but everyone's in a prison.
Exactly.
And because everyone's in a prison, you're not missing, had Zoom meetings and so on. But this is the crucial thing. For me, it actually just established that, you know, now people say to me, why do you come in to work every day? You don't have to. Some people I know say, I have to come in twice a week. Oh, well, but, you know, I'm thinking, for me, there's a life out there, even during the hot weather, because at the start of this week, it's a perfectly pleasant but coolish day today. We had 40 degrees at the start of the week. And for me, it's like, it's the need to live. It's the need to be, you know, I need my own space. I cherish my own space, but I also need to have people within proximity. So I'm the sort of person who go on my own to the cinema, but I go to a place where there are other people. You know, so I don't do things solipsistically, but I do it on my own. Mm. But that's not the same as actually doing it in a sort of a completely solitary way. Mm. And it sounds like that's similar. But I'd love to explore that with you about lockdown. So lockdown actually kind of benefited you in the sense that it made you think that actually you could do this.
Definitely. Do you want the whole lockdown story? But, of course, we were told that we could only go out and exercise for an hour. Yeah. That was the rule, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, at that time, I lived in a lovely but first-floor flat with no garden or even a balcony at that stage. And it didn't occur to me that I had to literally exercise. So I went out and sat on my usual bench opposite the police station and was told to go home in no uncertain terms. So then I realised I could... It started off with a very nice spell of good weather, if you remember. So we had a very good routine. This is where David Coburn has been very good to me. He had a garden. And for those first few months, I tidied the garden. So that was just wonderful. But again, it was lockdown, so we didn't see each other. And yes, I changed my routine. And I went back to letter writing. That was lovely. I went back to letter writing. And there were some people who were just friends that we communicate with each other by letter. Peggy Morgan was one of those great people, and she's a lovely letter writer. And then my other choices weren't so wise. I chose the young to encourage them to write and so that they wouldn't feel things were strange, but they're not very good at answering back. And I chose the elderly, who I felt I'm still not in the elderly category in my own mind. So I chose the elderly, and because they might feel isolated, and wrote to them. But of course, they're not great responders either.
But is that to do with the whole idea of waiting for a response in the mail and then the chance to sit down on your sofa and read it? Is it because the anticipation in, I mean, WhatsApp is wonderful because it means that you can send, you know, even like last night, it was a case of, you know, where are you? Which pub are you in, sort of thing? And, you know, and how did we manage 30 years ago? So we went down every pub and sort of poked our head around the door. But the letter, and I've got all the and when I digitised all my old diaries, by which I mean I wrote them all up on a computer, I was able, through my parents who had all my old letters, I was able to go through all those letters and write them out and then look at the date when the letter was written and then insert that into the diary, you know, into the diary entry for that day. So all of those wonderful connections. But no, letter writing was special. It was time consuming, but we weren't doing all the social media stuff that we're doing now. So there was a space for that. Mm. But you went back to that. But how successful has that been in terms of other people responding? But by the sound of it, you perhaps didn't get as many returns as you were hoping for.
I didn't. But the funny thing was, when you said anticipating the when I was a pen friend, I did anticipate the post every morning. It was really exciting because usually there was a letter. I've realised as I've told the story and you've spoken that, in fact, it was another of those little caring acts. I wasn't expecting replies during lockdown. I would have been delighted if I did. But no, mostly it was just an act of support in a difficult time.
Yeah. And now that we're through that, and the fact that this, I mean, this is the first time I've been able to return to Lampeter since the 2019 reunion, because I very briefly met you then.
That's right.
Then what has changed in the sense, because you, so it sounds like you acclimatised, contrary to your own expectations, to that ability to manage on your own. But has it changed you since? In other words, have you sort of felt the need to return to doing the things that you were doing? Or are you sort of like, no, actually, this is okay, I don't need to go out for the sake of it?
I think it's the latter. I don't need to go out. But I also feel I want to reclaim something of that life that I had before. Because I did, and I do enjoy it. What was interesting, I think, was that we were thrown into the pandemic situation and had to put huge effort into adapting. And it's a little bit, I thought, like culture shock. When we're going to a strange, different climate culture, we put effort into adapting. When we come home, we assume everything's going to be the same. But if we've been away for a long time, we have changed. Our family and friends have changed. So there is counterculture shock. Yeah. It's not as we expect. And I found initially we were told we could do all these different things, and I didn't put the effort into readjusting. Mm. I found coming out of lockdown very difficult. Mm. I was reluctant to, but now I think I'm back. And in fact, I am planning my first big trip in August.
Wow.
Only in England. Yeah. But going from one place on to another, yeah, and seeing if I can still do it.
But because I had, for me, 2019, because it feels almost pre-lapsarian because we didn't know what was to come. But 2019, I spent the Easter and the summer of that year on like a road trip. I was travelling around doing my interview. So it was actually a perfect bespoke holiday, because I realised that what I was doing, I was going to, like, in some cases, seaside resorts, but catching up with people. You know some of the people. Martin Bloomfield, for example. We met up in
Martin
Scarborough.
Dodgy Shoes.
We met up in Scarborough. He lives in York, but, you know, so it was a great chance to see the coast. So I was doing all of that. So I had, I went to Chester for a few days as well, you know, so I was able to go to various places, meet some amazing people. And instead of, you know, in the old-fashioned days, you'd have a postcard that you'd send to people. I'd come back with a whole hour's worth of their life compressed in the form of a nostalgia interview. And I did that twice over. So I had this amazing trip around the north of England, the Midlands, and so on. And then, of course, in 2020, on my Facebook feed, it would say to me, on this day, 1 year ago, you were doing this. And I was looking at this thinking, a year ago, I was on the beach in Seton Carew near Hartlepool. And here I was now stuck in a room and having Teams meetings with people from work and just thinking, gosh, you know, not so much how the mighty have fallen, but more the sort of, God, it just shows, you know, how we take the things that we take for granted.
Yes.
But it sounds as though that sort of acclimatisation is something that all of us, but as you rightly say, are still dealing with. I mean, were you doing Teams and Zoom type meetings during that period?
No, because when this crisis really occurred, I didn't have internet. No. I used the town library computers, so that was closed. I think I got the internet, well, it was sometime after, after the second lockdown. So I spent all that time without internet. Mm. So maybe that's why I turned to letter writing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the phone, of course, I had the phone.
Yeah.
And that was a nice thing. A number of people made a point of ringing regularly. And another wonderful thing for me was my nieces and nephews definitely gave me more attention. I think they were all a little bit concerned. I think they thought I was all on my own out here in the middle of West Wales. Mm. But I found that very moving. Yes.
That they did that. So, yes. And it's that sort of back to basics type thing. But at the end of the day, we... You know, we all lead busy lives, but sometimes just the time to take to be able to process.
Yes.
And just to think, you know, what are the things that matter? But I'm not nostalgic for those times, though. I'm not nostalgic for the times when. Although the one good thing for me in lockdown was that I was able to do my interviews online. So, and since then, I've met people and interviewed people in Canada, New Zealand, you know, literally all around the world. Mm. That in the past it would be a case of, well, I'll interview you next time you're in the UK, but now, of course, they come to me through online means. Mm. So there is something really special, I think.
Yes.
There. But that's one of the few good things I can think of from the last few years.
Yes.
But as we start to wrap up, Anne, just thinking, would you say as you look back on your life and career, that, you know, would you say that your memories are predominantly positive ones?
I think they are. Mm. I don't think there's much I regret. Mm. I think if I lived my life again, I wouldn't make drastic changes. What was the question?
Whether your memories are predominantly positive.
They are predominantly positive. And I also work hard on trying not to dwell on those that are negative.
Yeah. Because that's been the question for me about whether you can be, you know, whether you can see negative experiences as having a positive element. Maybe, you know, can you be nostalgic about something negative?
I'm not sure about... I meant to look up the word nostalgic before you came. Mm. But it's not what I would call nostalgic. They're learning experiences. Yeah. Mistakes, upsets, heartbreaks, disasters. their opportunities for growth, try not to make the same mistake again. Mm. And usually we learn something from it. Mm. Usually.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's interesting you talk about nostalgia. And I suppose it's that sort of, you know, is nostalgia positive or negative? It's, there's bits of both, because it's a bittersweetness. It's the sense that, see, I always see nostalgia as something that's very present-based, because it's the past, but as filtered through today. Mm. Is there something missing in our present that makes us hanker after something that either did or in our imagination, you know, happen in the past? And can we get it back? So there's a future element. But it's that sort of longing, that longing for home. And it's a kind of, it's a feeling that something's maybe out of alignment. And it's about, you know, what steps we can take to try and reintegrate. So the nostalgia is very much a sort of completist sort of thing. It's about trying to sort of find those, we know what those missing pieces are, but can we fill them, and does it give us closure, does it give us wholeness?
I think, and this might have happened during lockdown, I was afraid that maybe I was living too much in the past. Particularly somebody like me that likes the old music, has my diaries, looks at the photos. And I think I realised that I only had those memories because I'd acted then. And if I don't keep making new memories, the next stage of life isn't going to be very interesting.
Somebody who I interviewed, one of the first people I interviewed, actually, who's a colleague at my place of work, who was made a very interesting point about whether you can be nostalgic about things that didn't happen. And I suppose it could be in a romantic sense. Mm. It could be the relationship that you didn't have but wanted to have. It could be the sort of being nostalgic for something that you kind of maybe have pined for but didn't have. It's not just about, you know, weren't they great days? It's about they could have been great days, and maybe they still might be if you have a chance to sort of, you know, have a second chance. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot in that, because nostalgia is also about, it's the things that you did, but also about the things that you didn't do. And it's the things that you didn't do that can be, and same with you when we said about your O-levels, it's the not doing the well in your O-levels that actually
inspired
you
me
to have an to follow an educational path. Mm. So it's a sort of lateral thinking. Mm. But that, so you could say that it was the not getting the O-levels that you wanted that actually ensured that you had the qualifications to be able to do what you've been doing in the year since.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you for summing
up. Yeah, I've answered your own question. I don't put words in your mouth. Now, I've got two more questions. This is funny.
Right.
Because you have both answered them, but I'm going to ask them, because just out of parity with all the other interviews. The first one, which is a joke of a question, because it's, are you in touch with friends from your past? And the answer is, oh, let me think, Chris. I suppose there are a few. But for you, but I asked that question because it seems to me that is integral to who you are, that those friendships are absolutely inviolable.
Yes, yeah. My friendships are important, crucially important. I think it's like any relationship; it's got to be worked on, but it's a pleasure working on it. We have to maintain those relationships. I remember at one stage in Lampeter, I don't think it was a lecture, because Wendy Dossett and I were both at it. So it must have been a talk. And in it, the subject of shrines came up. And Wendy Dossett and I decided that my home is, in fact, a shrine. Mm. Because I am surrounded by little mementos of people who have been mostly in my Lampeter life and may not even be in Britain anymore.
Yeah.
But there's a little something of them. Yeah. And I tend, actually, now this I suspect is nostalgia. If I use, I make a conscious point of remembering who it's from.
Mm.
I do like that aspect of things. Yeah. Yes.
So it sounds like, and I do this as well, you know, sort of you wake up in the morning and there's a particular association, a memory, a person that you kind of, and you've got the artifacts, the actual physical artifacts of them in your home. So that is priceless. And the last question, you actually just answered it, actually.
Oh, dear.
But it's about whether you know, whether you're a looking back or a looking forward kind of person, because it sounds as though that's actually been, and perhaps you would have answered that question differently before lockdown.
I might have. I might have. That people plan their holidays, and I think both my sister and my mother used to say it's good to have something to look forward to. I actually feel quite content with my daily life, so I don't need that special thing to look forward to. But yes, I have recognised I must plan forward. I love remembering. We only are who we are because of what's gone before. I love remembering, but I also like doing new things.
Yeah, and what a perfect way to end, and so wonderful, finally, to catch up with you again after quite a few years. Thanks for being my guest this week.
Thank you, Chris. Bye-bye.